Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah Davis, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, at the 12th Hour, Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is February 24, 2017. It's AR 28, 2020. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, Don't Let That Ship Sail By.
Don't let that ship sail by, lost beyond the shore. The captain of that mighty ship is standing at the door. He'll welcome all to come aboard as infinity more. As the ship sets sail for the harbor lights of that far distant shore. Don't let that ship sail by. Don't let that ship sail by. For she has a payload to deliver in the sky. For the saints of all ages are rising. And if there when that ship goes sailing by, I dreamed of lighted harbor, silver ships in the sky. I dreamed of someday sailing through that sweet by and by. I dreamed about those mansions that had gone to prepare. Don't let that ship sail by. Don't let that ship sail by. For she has a payload to deliver in the sky. For the saints of all ages are riding her on high. So don't get tossed and in there when that ship goes sailing. Don't let that ship sail by while standing on the shore. For the welcome sign reads, there's a room for many more. For the captain of that mighty ship is standing by the door. We'll welcome all to come aboard destination. Don't let that ship sail by. Don't let that ship sail by. For she has a payload to deliver in the sky. For the saints of old ages are riding her on high. So don't get tossed standing there when that ship goes sailing.
Part 19, Captivity and Restoration, Prophets and Kings. We're going to continue with our study. We're on page 533. We're dealing with the subject of the Unseen Watcher. Come down and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon. Sit on the ground, there is no throne. Sit thou silent, and get thee in the darkness, O daughter of the Chaldean. For thou shalt no more be called a lady of kingdoms. I was wroth with my people. I have polluted mine inheritance and given them into thine hand. Thou didst show them no mercy, and thou saidest I shall be a lady forever, so that thou didst not lay these things to thy heart. Neither didst thou remember the latter end of it. Therefore hear now this. Thou that art given unto pleasures, that dwellest courteously, that sayest in thine heart, I am and none else beside me. I shall not sit as a widow, neither shall I know the loss of children. These two things shall come unto thee in a moment, in one day, the loss of children and widowhood. They shall come upon thee in their perfection for the multitude of thy sorceries, and for the great abundance of thine enchantment. For thou hast trusted in thy wickedness. Thou hast said, none seeth me. Now wisdom and thy knowledge it hath perverted thee, and thou hast said in thine heart, I am and none else beside me. Therefore shall evil come upon thee. Thou shalt not know from whence it riseth, and mischief shall fall upon thee. Thou shalt not be able to put it off, and desolation shall come upon thee suddenly, which thou shalt not know. It says, stand now with thine enchantments, and with the multitude of thy sorceries wherein thou hast labored from thy youth. If so be thou shalt be able to profit, if so be thou mayest prevail, thou art weary in the multitude of thy counsel. Let now the astrologers, the stargazers, the monthly prognosticators stand up and say thee, from these things they shall come upon thee. Behold, they shall be as stubble. They shall not deliver themselves from the power of the flame. None shall save thee, Isaiah 47, 1 to 15. Every nation that has come upon the stage of action has been permitted to occupy its place on the earth, that the fact might be determined whether it would fulfill the purposes of the Watcher and the Holy One. Prophecy has traced the rise and progress of the world's great empires. Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome, with each of these, as with the nations of less power, history has repeated itself. Each has had its period of the test. Each has failed, its glory faded, its power departed. While nations have rejected Yahweh's principles, and in this rejection have wrought their own ruin, yet a divine overruling purpose has manifested, been at work throughout the ages. It was this that the prophet Ezekiel saw in the wonderful representation given him during his exile in the land of the Chaldeans. And before his astonished gaze were portrayed the symbols that revealed an overruling power that has to do with the affairs of the earthly rulers. Upon the banks of the river Chebar, Ezekiel beheld a whirlwind seeming to come from the north, a great cloud and a fire enfolding itself, and a brightness was about it, and out of the mixture of as a color of amber. A number of wheels intersecting one another were moved by the four living beings. High above all these was the likeness of a throne, as the appearance of a sapphire stone. And upon the likeness of the throne was the likeness as the appearance of a man above upon it. And there appeared in the cherubims the form of a man's hand under their wings. Ezekiel 1:4, verse 26, Ezekiel 10:8. For the wheels were so complicated in the arrangement that at first sight they appeared to be in confusion, yet they moved in perfect harmony. Heavenly beings sustained and guided by the hand beneath the wings of the cherubim were impelling those wheels. Above them upon the sapphire throne was the eternal one, and round about the throne was a rainbow, the emblem of the divine mercy. as the wheel-like complications were under the guidance of the hand beneath the wings of the cherub, so the complicated play of the human events is under the divine control. Amid the strife and tumult of the nation, he that sitteth above the cherubims still guards the affairs of this earth. For the history of the nations speaks unto us today. Unto every nation and unto every individual, Yahweh has assigned a place in his great plan. Today men and nations are being tested by the plummet in the hand of him who makes no mistake. All are by their own choice deciding their destiny, and Elohim is overruling all for the accomplishment of his purposes. For the prophecies which the great I Am has given in his word, uniting link after link in the chain of the events from the eternity in the past into the eternity in the future, tell us where we are today in the procession of the ages and what may be expected in the time to come. All that prophecy has foretold has come to pass until the present time has been traced on the pages of the history. We may be assured that all which is yet to come will be fulfilled in its order. Today, the signs of time declare that we are standing on the threshold of the great and solemn event. Everything in our world is in agitation. Before our eyes is fulfilling the Savior's prophecy of the events to precede his coming. Ye shall hear of wars, rumors of wars, nations shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in divers places. Matthew 24:6-7. The present is a time of overwhelming interest unto all living. Rulers and statesmen, men who occupy positions of the trust and authority, thinking men and women of all classes, have their attention fixed upon the events taking place about us. They are watching the relations that exist among the nations. They observe the intensity that is taking possession of every earthly element, and they recognize that something great and decisive is about to take place, that the world is on the verge of a stupendous crisis. The Bible, and the Bible only, gives a correct view of these things. Here are revealed the great final scenes in the history of our world. Events that already are casting their shadows before the sound of their approach, causing the earth to tremble and men's hearts to fail them for fear. Behold, the Yahweh maketh the earth empty and maketh it waste and turneth it upside down and scattereth abroad the inhabitants thereof. Because they have transgressed the laws, changed the ordinance, broken the everlasting covenant, therefore hath the curse devoured the earth, and they that dwell therein are desolate. Isaiah 24:1-6. Alas, for the day of the Yahweh is at hand, and as a destruction from the Almighty shall it come. For the seed is rotten under their clods, the garners are laid desolate, the barns are broken down, for the corn is withered. How do the beasts groan? The herds of the cattle are perplexed, because they have no pasture. Yea, the flocks of the sheep are made desolate. The vine is dried up and the fig tree languishes. For the pomegranate tree, the palm tree also, and the apple tree, even all the trees of the field, are withered, because joy is withered away from the sons of men. Joel 1:15-18-12. I am pained at my very heart. Nor can I hold my peace, because thou hast heard, O my soul, the sound of the trumpet, the alarm of the war, destruction upon destruction is cried, for the whole land is spoiled, Jeremiah 4:19-20. Last for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is even the time of the Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it. Jeremiah 30, verse 7. Because thou hast made the Yahweh, which is my refuge, even the Most High, thy habitation, there shall no evil befall thee, neither shall any plague come nigh thy dwelling. Psalms 91, 9 and 10. O daughter of Zion, the Yahweh shall redeem thee from the hand of thine enemy. And also many nations are gathered against thee that say, let her be defiled, and let our eye look upon Zion. But they know not the thoughts of the Yahweh, and neither understand they his counsel. Micah 4:10-12. Yahweh will not fail his church in the hour of her greatest peril. He has promised deliverance. I will bring again the captivity of Jacob's tents, he has declared, and have mercy on his dwelling places. Jeremiah 30, verse 18. Then will the purpose of Elohim be fulfilled. The principles of his kingdom will be honored by all beneath the sun. End of chapter 43. We'll go right on into chapter 44 in the lion's den. When Darius the Median took the throne formerly occupied by the Babylonian rulers, he at once proceeded to recognize the government. He set over the kingdom 120 princes, and over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might have a count under them, and the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes because an extra spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. For the honors bestowed upon Daniel excited the jealousy of the leading men of the kingdom, and they sought for the occasion of complaint against him, but they could find none. Forasmuch as he was faithful, neither was there any error nor fault found in him. Daniel's blameless conduct excited still further the jealousy of his enemy. We shall not find any occasion against this Daniel they were constrained to acknowledge, except we find it against him concerning the law of his Yahweh. Therefore the presidents and princes, counseling together, devised a scheme whereby they hoped to accomplish the prophet's destruction. They determined to ask the king to sign a decree which they should prepare, forbidding any person in the realm to ask anything of Yahweh or man except of Darius the king for the space of 30 days. For a violation of this decree should be punished by catching the offender and to a den of lions. According to the princes, prepared such a decree and presented unto Darius his signature, for his signature. Appealing unto his vanity, they persuaded him that the carrying out of this edict would add greatly to his honor and authority. Ignorant of the subtle purpose of the princes, the king did not discern their animosity as revealed in the decree. And yielding unto their flattery, he signed it. The enemies of the Daniel left the presence of Darius, rejoicing over the snare now securely laid for the servants of Yahweh. In the conspiracy thus formed, Satan had played an important part, for the prophet was high in command in the kingdom, and evil angels feared that his influence would weaken their control over his rulers. It was these satanic agencies who had stirred the princes to envy and jealousy. It was they who had inspired the plan for the Daniel's destruction, and the princes, yielding themselves as instruments of the evil, carried it into effect. The prophet's enemies counted on Daniel's firm adherence to principle for the success of their plan. They were not mistaken in their estimate of his character, for he quickly read the malignant purpose and the frame of the decree. but he did not change his course in a single particular. Why should he cease to pray now, when he most needed to pray? Rather, would he relinquish life itself than his hope of help in the hour? With the Thomists, he performed his duties as the chief of the princes. And at the hour of prayer, he went to his chamber, and with his windows open toward Jerusalem, in accordance with his usual custom, he offered his petition to Yahweh. the heaven, he did not try to conceal his act, although he knew full well of the consequences of his fidelity unto Yahweh, for his spirit faltered not. Before those who were plotting his ruin, he would not allow it even to appear that his connection with the heaven was severed. In all cases where the king had a right to command, Daniel would obey, but neither the king nor his decree could make him swerve from allegiance unto the King of Kings. Thus the prophet boldly, quietly and humbly declared that no earthly power has a right to interpose between the soul of man, the soul of Yahweh, surrounded by the idolaters, for he was a faithful witness unto this truth. His dauntless adherence to right was a bright light in the moral darkness of that heathen court. Daniel stands before the world today a worthy example of the Christian fearlessness and fidelity. For an entire day the princes watched Daniel. Three times they saw him go to his chamber, and three times they heard his voice lifted in the earnest intercession of the Yahweh. Next morning they laid their complaint before the king. Daniel, his most honored and faithful statesman, has set the royal decree at defiance. Hast thou not signed a decree, they remind him, that every man that shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, say of thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. The thing is true, the king answered, according unto the law of the Medes and Persians, which alters not. Exultantly, they now informed Darius of the conduct of his most trusted advisor. That Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity of Judah, they exclaimed, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition three times a day. When the monarch heard these words, he saw at once the snare that had been set for his faithful servant. He saw that it was not zeal for the kingly glory and honor, but jealousy against Daniel that had led to the proposal for a royal decree. Sore displeased with himself for his part in the evil that had been wrought, he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver his friend. For the princes, anticipating this effort on the part of the king, came to him with the word, "Know, king, that the law of the Medes and the Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king establishes may be changed. For the decree, though rashly made, was unalterable and must be carried into effect." Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, "Thy Elohim, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee." A stone was laid on the mouth of the den, and the king himself sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords. That the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Now there were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. Yahweh did not prevent Daniel's enemies from casting him into the lion's den, he permitted evil angels and wicked men thus far to accomplish their purpose, but it was that he might make the deliverance of his servant more marked, and the defeat of the enemies of the truth and righteousness more complete. Surely the wrath of man shall praise thee, Psalm 76:10. The psalmist has testified through the courage of this one man who chose to follow right rather than policy, Satan was to be defeated. And the name of Yahweh is to be exalted and honored. Early the next morning, King Darius hastened unto the den and cried with a lamentable voice, O Daniel, servant of the living Elohim, is that Elohim whom thou servest continually able to deliver thee from the lion? The voice of the prophet cried, O King, live forever. Now Elohim has sent his angel and has shut the lion's mouth, that they have not hurt me. For as much as before him, innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O King, have I done no hurt. Then was the king exceeding glad for him, and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him, because he believed in his Elohim. And the king commanded, and they brought those men which had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions. Them, their children, their wives, and their lions had the master of them break all their bones in pieces, wherever they came at the bottom of the den. Once more a proclamation was issued by a heathen ruler, exalting the Elohim of Daniel as a true Elohim. King Darius wrote unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell on all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom men tremble and fear before the Elohim of Daniel, for he is a living Elohim and steadfast forever. And his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth. He worketh signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. For the wicked opposition and the Elohim's servant was now completely broken. Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian, and through association with him, these heathen monarchs were constrained to acknowledge his Elohim as a living Elohim and steadfast forever, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. More complete, surely the wrath of man shall praise thee, Psalm 76:10. The psalmist has testified through the courage of this one man who chose to follow right rather than policy. Satan was to be defeated, and the name of Yahweh was to be exalted and honored. From the story of the Daniel's deliverance, we may learn that in the seasons of trial and gloom, Yahweh's children should be just what they were when their prospects were bright, with the hope and their surroundings all that they could desire. Daniel in the lion's den was the same Daniel who stood before the king as chief among the ministers of the state and as a prophet of the Most High. A man whose heart is stayed up on Yahweh will be the same in the hour of his greatest trial, as he is in the prosperity when the light and favor of the Yahweh and of man beam upon him. Faith reaches to the unseen and grasps eternal reality. Let's read that again. For the faith reaches unto the unseen and grasps of the eternal reality. For the heaven is very near unto those who suffer for the righteousness' sake. For Yeshua identifies his interest with the interest of his faithful people. For he suffers in the person of the saints, and whosoever touches his chosen ones touches him. The power that is near to deliver from the physical harm or distress is also near to save from the greater evil, making it possible for the servant of Yahweh for the maintaining of his integrity under all circumstances, and the triumph through the divine grace in the latter days, and of the revelation that Yahshua gave unto his servant John for the guidance of the people, Yahweh's people, all through the century. The promise is, blessed is he that readeth, and they that hear the words of this prophecy, and hear those things which are written therein. Revelation 1:3. From the rise and fall of the nations is made plain in the books of the Daniel and of the Revelation. We need to learn how worthless is mere outward and worldly glory. For the Babylon, with all its power and magnificence, the like of which our world has never since beheld, power and magnificence, which unto the people of that day seemed so stable and enduring, how completely has it passed away? As the flower of the grass, it has perished. James 1:10. So perished the Medo-Persian kingdom, and the kingdoms of Grecia and Rome, and so perished all that has not Yahweh for its foundation. Only that which is bound up with his purpose and expresses his character can endure, for his principles are the only steadfast things our world knows. And for a careful study of the working out of the Elohim's purpose in the history of the nations and in the revelation of the things to come will help us for the estimating their true value, things seen and things unseen, and to learn what is the true aim of the life, thus viewing the things of the time in the light of the eternity. We may, like Daniel and his fellows, live for that which is true and noble and enduring, and learning in this life the principles of the kingdom of our Savior, of our King, that blessed kingdom which is to endure forever and ever. We may be prepared at his coming to enter with him into its possession. The Yahweh rebuked the old Satan, even the Yahweh that has chosen Yahushua rebuked thee. Is not this a brand picked out of the burning, out of the fire? Zechariah 3:2. Return of the exiles. We just finished chapter 44. Let's go right on into chapter 45. For the advent of the army of the Cyrus before the walls of the Babylon was unto the Jews a sign that their deliverance from the captivity was drawing nigh. More than a century before the birth of the Cyrus, inspiration had mentioned him by the name and had caused a record to be made of the actual work he should do in the taking the city of Babylon unawares. And in the preparing of the way for the release of the children of the captivity through the Isaiah, the word had been spoken. Thus saith Yahweh unto his anointed, unto Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden, to subdue nations before him, to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates that shall not be shut. I will go before thee and make the crooked places straight. I will break in pieces the gates of the bars and cut in sunder the bars of the iron, and I will give thee the treasures of the darkness and hidden riches of the secret places, that thou mayest know that I, the Yahweh, which called thee by thy name, am the Yahweh of Israel. Isaiah 45:1-3. In the unexpected entry of the army of the Persian conqueror into the heart of the Babylonian capital by the way of the channel of the river, whose waters had been turned aside, and through the inner gates that in the careless security had been left open and unprotected, the Jews had abundant evidence of the literal fulfillment of the Isaiah's prophecy concerning the sudden overthrow of their oppressors. Okay. And this should have been to them an unmistakable sign that Yahweh was shaping the affairs of the nations in their behalf, for the inseparable link between the prophecy outlining the manner of the Babylon's capture and a fall were the words, Cyrus is my shepherd, and shall perform all my pleasure, even saying unto Jerusalem. See? thou shalt be built, and unto the temple thy foundation shall be laid. I have raised him up in righteousness, and I will direct all his ways. He shall build my city, and he shall let go my captives. Not for price nor reward, saith the Yahweh of hosts. Isaiah 44:28, Isaiah 45:13. Nor were these the only prophecies upon which the exiles had opportunity to base their hope of the speedy deliverance. For the writings of Jeremiah was in their reach, and in these was plainly set forth the length of time that should elapse before the restoration of the Israel from the Babylon. When 70 years are accomplished, Yahweh had foretold through his messenger, I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, saith Yahweh, for their iniquity, and the land of the Chaldeans, and will make it perpetual desolation. Jeremiah 25:12. Favor would be shown the remnant of Judah in answer unto the fervent prayer, I will be found of you, saith Yahweh, and I will turn away your captivity, and I will gather you from all the nations and from all the places whither I have driven you, saith Yahweh. And I will bring you again into the place whence I caused you to be carried away captive. Jeremiah 29:14. Often had Daniel and his companions gone over these and similar prophecies outlining Yahweh's purpose for his people. And now, as the rapid course of the events betokened the mighty hand of the Elohim at the work among the nations, Daniel gave special thought unto the promises made unto the Israel, for his faith in the prophetic word led him for the entering into the experiences foretold by the sacred writers. After 70 years he accomplished at Babylon, Yahweh had declared, I will visit you and perform my good word towards you and cause you to return. I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith Yahweh, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. Then shall you call upon me, and you shall go and pray unto me, and I will hearken unto you. And you shall seek me and find me, and you shall search for me with all your heart. Verses 10-13. Shortly before the fall of Babylon, when Daniel was meditating on these prophecies and seeking Yahweh for an understanding of the time, a series of visions was given him concerning the rise and fall of the kingdom. But the first vision, as recorded in the 7th chapter of the book of the Daniel, an interpretation was given, yet not all was made clear unto the prophet. My cogitation much troubled me, he wrote, of his experience at the time, and my countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart. Daniel 7:28. To another vision, further light was thrown upon the events of the future. And it was at the close of this vision that Daniel heard one a saint speaking, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spake, how long shall be the vision? Daniel 8:13. The answer that was given, unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. Verse 14. Filled him with the perplexity. Honestly, he sought for the meaning of the vision. He could not understand the relation sustained by the 70 years captivity, as foretold through Jeremiah, to the 300 years that envision, no, to the 2,300 years that in the vision he heard the heavenly visitant declare should it last before the cleansing of Yahweh's sanctuary. The angel Gabriel gave him a partial interpretation. Yet when the prophet heard the words, the vision shall be no more, or shall be for many days, he fainted away. I, Daniel, fainted, he records of his experience. And were 6 certain days afterwards, I rose up and did the king's business. and I was astonished at the vision, but none understood it. Verses 26 and 27. Still burdened in the behalf of the Israel, Daniel studied anew the prophecies of Jeremiah. They were very plain, so plain that he understood by those these testimonies recorded in the books the number of the years whereof the word of Yahweh came to Jeremiah the prophet, that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolation of Jerusalem. Daniel 9:2. With faith founded on the sure word of prophecy, Daniel pleaded with Yahweh for the speedy fulfillment of these promises. He pleaded for the honor of Yahweh to be preserved in his petition. He identified himself fully with those who had fallen short of the divine purpose, confessing their sins as his own. I set my face unto Yahweh Elohim, the prophet declared, to seek by the prayer and supplications with fasting and sackcloth and ashes, and I prayed unto the Yahweh, my Elohim, my Yahweh, and made my confession. Verse 3 and 4. Though Daniel had long been in the service of Yahweh and had been spoken of by heaven as greatly beloved, yet he now appeared before Yahweh as a sinner, urging the great need of the people. He loved his prayer. His prayer was eloquent in its simplicity and intensity. Let's read that all again. I seem to lost my focus here. Though the Daniel had long been in the service of Yahweh and had been spoken of by the heaven as the greatly beloved, yet he now appeared before the Yahweh as a sinner, urging the great need of the people he loved. His prayer was eloquent in its simplicity and intensely earnest. Hear him pleading. O Yahweh, the great and dreadful Yahweh, keeping the covenant and mercy unto them that love him, and to them that keep his commandment. We have sinned, and have committed iniquity, and have done wickedly, and have rebelled, even by departing from thy precepts and from thy judgment. Now that have we hearkened unto thy servant, the prophets, which spake in thy name unto our kings, our princes, and our fathers, and unto all the people of the land. O Yahweh, righteousness belongeth unto thee, but unto us confusion of the faces, as at the day, unto the men of the Judah, and unto the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and unto all Israel that are near, and that are far off, through all the countries whither thou hast driven them, because of their trespass, that they have trespassed against thee. Unto Yahweh our Elohim belongs mercy and forgiveness, though we have rebelled against him, O Yahweh, according unto all thy righteousness. I beseech thee, let thine anger and thy fury be turned away from the city Jerusalem, thy holy mountain, because for our sins and for the iniquities of our fathers Jerusalem and thy people are become a reproach unto all that are about us. Now therefore, O our Elohim, hear the prayer of thy servant and his supplication. Cause thy face to shine upon thy sanctuary that is destined for the Yahweh's sake of my Elohim. Incline thine ear and hear. Open thine eyes and behold our desolations and the city which is called by thy name. For we do not present our supplications before thee for our righteousness, before thy great mercies. O Yahweh, hear, O Yahweh, forgive, O Yahweh, hearken, and do not, defer not, for thine own sake, O my Elohim, for thy city, and thy people are called by thy name. Verses 4-9, 16-19. Heaven was bending low to hear the earnest supplication of the prophet, even before he had finished his plea for pardon and restoration. The mighty Gabriel again appeared unto him, and called his attention unto the vision he had seen prior unto the fall of Babylon and the death of Belshazzar. And then the angel outlined before him in detail the period of the 70 weeks, which was to begin at the time of the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem. Verse 25. Daniel's prayer had been offered in the first year of the Darius. Verse 1. For the Median monarch, whose general, Cyrus, had wrested from Babylonia the scepter of the universal rule, the reign of Darius was honored of Yahweh. Unto him was sent the angel Gabriel to confirm and to strengthen him. Daniel 11:1. Upon his death, within about 2 years of the fall of Babylon, Cyrus succeeded to the throne. And the beginning of his reign marked the completion of the 70 years since the first company of Hebrew had been taken by Nebuchadnezzar from their Judean home to Babylon. For the deliverance of Daniel from the den of the lions had been used of Yahweh to create a favorable impression upon the mind of Cyrus the Great. For the sterling qualities of the man of Yahweh as a statesman, of the foreseeing ability, led the Persian ruler to show him marked respect and to honor his judgment. And now just at the time Elohim had said he would cause his temple at Jerusalem to be rebuilt, he moved upon Cyrus and his agents to discern the prophecy concerning himself, with which Daniel was so familiar, and to grant the Jewish people their liberty. As the king saw the words foretelling more than 100 years before his birth, the manner in which Babylon should be taken, as he read the message addressed unto him by the ruler of the universe, I girded thee, though thou hast not known me, that they may know from the rising of the sun and from the west that there is none beside me, as he saw before his eyes the declaration of the eternal Yahweh. For the Jacob my servant's sake and Israel mine elect, I have even called thee by thy name. I have surnamed thee, though thou hast not known me. As he traced the inspired record, I have raised him up in the righteousness, and I will direct all his ways. He shall build my city, and he shall let go my captives, not for price nor reward. His heart was profoundly moved, and he determined to fulfill his divinely appointed mission. Isaiah 45:5, 6:4, and 13. He would let the Judean captives go free. He would help them restore the temple of the Yahweh. In a written proclamation published throughout all his kingdom, Cyrus made known his desire to provide for the return of the Hebrews and for the rebuilding of their temple. The Yahweh of the heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth. The king gratefully acknowledged in this public proclamation, and he has charged me to build him an house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Who is there among you of all his people? His Elohim be with him, and let him go up unto Jerusalem and build the house of the Yahweh Elohim of Israel. He is the Yahweh, which is in Jerusalem, and whosoever remaineth in any place where he sojourneth, let the men of his place help him with the silver, and with the gold, and with goods, and with a beast beside the freewill offering, Ezra 1 and 1 to 4. Let the house be builded, he further directed regarding the temple structure, the place where they offered sacrifices, and let the foundations thereof be strongly laid, the height thereof 60 cubits, and the breadth thereof 60 cubits, the 3 rows of the great stones, and a row of new timber, and let the expenses be given out of the king's house, and also let the golden and the silver vessel of the Yahweh of the Elohim, which Nebuchadnezzar took forth out of the temple which is at Jerusalem, and brought unto the Babylon, be restored and brought again unto the temple which is at Jerusalem. Ezra 6:3-5. Tidings of this decree reached the furthermost provinces of the king's realm, and everywhere among the children of the dispersion there was great rejoicing. Many, like Daniel, had been studying the prophecies and had been seeking Elohim for his promised intervention in the behalf of Zion. and now their prayers were being answered, and with the heartfelt joy, they could unite in the singing. When Yahweh turned again the captivity of Zion, we were like them that dream. Then was our mouth filled with the laughter, and our tongue with the singing. Then said they among the heathen, the Yahweh hath done great things for them. The Yahweh hath done great things for us, whereof we are glad. Psalms 126:23. The chief of the fathers of Judah and Benjamin, and the priests and the Levites, with all them whose spirit Yahweh had raised, those were the goodly remnant, about 50,000 strong, from among the Jews and the lands of the exiles. He determined to take advantage of the wonderful opportunity offered them to go up to build the house of the Yahweh, which is in Jerusalem. Their friends did not permit them to go empty-handed. All they that were about them strengthened their hands with vessels of silver, with gold, with goods, and with beasts, and with precious things. And unto these and many other voluntary offerings were added the vessels of the house of Yahweh that the Nebuchadnezzar had brought forth out of Jerusalem. Even those did Cyrus, king of the Persia, bring forth by the hand of Mithridat the treasurer, 5,400 in number, for use in the temple that was to be rebuilt, Ezra 1:5-11. Alphonse of Rubble, known also as Sheshbazzar, a descendant of the King David, Cyrus placed the responsibility of the acting as governor of the company returned unto Judea, and with him was associated Joshua, the high priest. The long journey across the desert waste was accompanied in the safety and the happy company, grateful unto Elohim for his many mercies, that once undertook the work of the reestablishing that which had been broken down, destroyed. For the chief of the fathers led out in the offering of their substance to help defray the expense of rebuilding the temple, and the people, following their example, gave freely of their meager store, see Ezra 2:64-70. As speedily as possible, an altar was erected on the side of the ancient altar in the temple court. Unto the exercises connected with the dedication of this altar, the people had gathered themselves together as one man, and there they united in the reestablishing of the sacred services that had been interrupted at the time of the destruction of Jerusalem by the Nebuchadnezzar. Before the separating to dwell in the homes they were endeavoring to restore, they kept also the feast of tabernacle of Ezra 3:1-6, for the setting up of the altar of the daily burnt offerings greatly cheered the faithful remnant. Heartily they entered into the preparations necessary for the rebuilding of the temple, gathering courage as these preparations advanced from month to month. They had for many years been deprived of the visible token of the Elohim's presence, and now, surrounded as they were by the many sad reminders of the apostasy of their fathers, they longed for some abiding token of the divine forgiveness and favor. Above the regaining of the personal property and ancient privileges, they valued the approval of Yahweh. Wonderfully had he wrought in their behalf, and they felt the assurance of his presence with them. Yet they desired greater blessings still. With a joyous anticipation, they looked forward unto the time when, with the temple rebuilt, they might behold the shining forth of his glory from within. For the workmen engaged in the preparation of the building material found among the ruins some of the immense stones brought into the temple site in the days of Solomon. These were made ready for the use, and much new material was provided, and soon the work was advanced into the point where the foundation stone must be laid. This was done in the presence of the many thousands who had assembled for the witnessing of the progress of the work and for the giving expression unto their joy and the having a part in it. While the cornerstone was being set in the position, the people, accompanied by the trumpets of the priests and the cymbals of the sons of Asaph, sung signed together by the course and the praising and giving thanks unto the Yahweh, because he is good, for his mercy endures forever toward Israel. Verse 11. For the house that was about to be rebuilt had been the subject of many prophecies concerning the favor that Elohim desired to show Zion, and all who were present at the laying of the cornerstone should have entered heartily into the spirit of the occasion, yet mingled with the music and the shouts of the praise that were heard on that glad day was a discordant note. Many of the priests and Levites and chief of the fathers, who were ancient men that had seen the first house when the foundation of this house was laid, before their eyes wept with a loud voice. Verse 12. It was natural that sadness should fill the hearts of these aged men as they thought of the results of the long-continued impenitence. Had they and their generation obeyed Yahweh and carried out his purpose for the Israel, the temple built by the Solomon would not have been destroyed and the captivity would not have been necessary. But because of the ingratitude and disloyalty, they had been scattered among the heathen. Conditions were now changed, and the tender mercy Yahweh had again visited his people and allowed them to return unto their own land. Sadness because of the mistakes of the past should have given way unto the feelings of the great joy, for the Elohim had moved upon the heart of the sorrows to aid them in rebuilding the temple, and this should have called forth expressions of the profound gratitude. But some failed of the discerning Elohim's opening providences. Instead of the rejoicing, they cherished thoughts of the discontent and discouragement. They had seen the glory of the Solomon's temple, and they lamented because of the inferiority of the temple now to be erected. For the murmurings and complainings and the unfavorable comparisons made had a depressing influence on the minds of many and weakened the hands of the builders. For the workmen were led to question whether they should proceed with the erection of a building that at the beginning was so freely criticized and was the cause of so much lamentation. There are many in the congregation, however, whose larger faith and broader vision did not lead them to view this lesser glory with such dissatisfaction. Many shouted aloud for the joy, so that the people could not discern the noise of the shout of the joy from the noise of the weeping of the people. For the people shouted with a loud shout, and the noise was heard afar off. Verses 12 and 13. To those who failed to rejoice in the land of the foundation stone of the temple have foreseen the results of their lack of the faith on that day, they would have been appalled. Little did they realize the weight of their words of the disapproval and disappointment. Little did they know how much their expressed dissatisfaction would delay the completion of the Yahweh's house. For the magnificence of the first temple and the imposing rites of its religious services had been a source of the pride unto the Israel before their captivity. But their worship had oftentimes been lacking in those qualities which the Elohim regards as most essential. The glory of the first temple, the splendor of its services, could not recommend them unto Elohim for that which is alone of value in his sight they did not offer. They did not bring him the sacrifice of the humble and contrite spirit. It is when the vital principles of the kingdom of the Elohim are lost sight of that the ceremonies become multitudinous and extravagant. It is when the character building is neglected, when the adornment of the soul is lacking, when the simplicity of the righteousness is despised, that pride and love of the display demand magnificent churches, edifices, or magnificent church edifices, splendid adorning, and imposing ceremonials. But in all this, Elohim is not honored. He values his church not for its external advantages, but for the sincere piety which distinguishes it from the world. He estimates it according unto the growth of its members in the knowledge of Yahshua, according unto their progress and the spiritual experience. He looks for the principles of the love and goodness. Not all the beauty of the art can bear comparison with the beauty of the temper and character to be revealed in those who are Yahshua's representatives. For a congregation may be the poorest in the land, it may be without the attractions of any outward show, but if the members possess the principles of the character of Yahshua, angels will unite with them in their worship, for the praise and thanksgiving from the grateful hearts will ascend unto Yahweh as a sweet oblation. Give thanks unto Yahweh, for he is good, for his mercy endureth forever. Let the redeemer of the Yahweh say so, whom he hath redeemed from the hand of the enemy. Sing unto him, sing psalms unto him, talk ye of all his wondrous works. Glory ye in his holy name. Let the heart of them rejoice that seek Yahweh, for he satisfieth the longing soul, and filleth the hungry soul with the goodness. Psalms 107, verse 1 and 2, Psalms 105, verse 2 and 3, and Psalms 107, verse 9. This brings the end of chapter 45 and the end of this study for this hour. You can contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Let the heavenly light shine through. For you would not have known about a wonderful Yahweh that created you. And you would not have known about a fresh creation that he can do. So draw near unto Yahweh, remember to pray, let the heavenly light shine through. And Yahweh's mercy when it comes again will have a heavenly home for you. There would not have been a creation of earth if Yah had not come down. He spoke the word, all creation heard, and the world started spinning around. Then he spoke the word, and the light appeared. He divided it from the night. And Yah saw that his work was good, created by his mind. Let the heavenly light shine through. Let the heavenly light shine through. And Yahweh is busy when he comes, and then we'll have a heavenly home for you. Where you climb up on a mountain and you look around, there's a green valley below. There's a moon up above that's shining with love, there's a peaceful river that flows. There's a bird and a bee and a fire and a tree and all in heaven. That this is just a glimpse of what's awaiting over there. Let the heavenly light shine through. Let the heavenly light shine through. Now, in the earth, when he comes again, we'll have a heavenly home.